One who considers Lord Vishnu to be in the same category with the devas, like Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, or who thinks Lord Brahma and Lord and Shiva to be equal to Lord Vishnu, is considered to be a prasangi, a faithless non-believer. Sometimes Prabhupada just says an atheist. Therefore, in this verse, the Lord Vishnu is distinguished with the word in the words Namo Vishuddha Sattvaya. Although the community like us, Lord Brahma is exalted due to his pious activities. Therefore, he is given the high post of Brahma. Lord Shiva is not actually like the divinity, but he is not the Supreme Personality body. His position is somewhere between Vishnu, the Supreme Personality body, and Brahma, the divinity. Lord Shiva is therefore explained in Brahma Samhita 5.45 in this way. Shivam yathāra vipathāra vaseśa yoga sanjāyatena hitathāpatarāśiheto yāśakotāma pitatāsamu vaitikāya govindamādhikupuśantamahandajāni. Lord Shiva is considered to be like yogis, Dhani. Yogis is nothing but transformed milk. Nonetheless, yoga cannot be accepted as milk. Similarly, Lord Shiva holds almost all the powers of Lord Vishnu, and he is also above the qualities of the divinity, but he is not exactly like Vishnu. Just as yoga, the transformed milk, is not exactly like milk. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also described herein as Vasudevaya Krishnaya. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all Vishnu expansions are his plenary portions, or portions of his plenary portions known as Svamsa and Kala. The Svamsa, or direct expansion, is also called Hamsa. All Vishnu tattvas are svamsa, direct parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Krishna is known as Vasudeva because he appeared in this material world as the son of Vasudeva. Simply, he is known as Devaki Nandana, Yashoda Nandana, Nanda Nandana, and so on. Again and again, the Lord is very much interested in increasing the influence of his devotees. Therefore, he is described here in his Prabhuved Sattva Sattvatam. The Sattva community is a Vaishnava, is a community of Vaishnavas, pure devotees of the Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has unlimited powers, and he wants to see that his devotees are also entrusted with unlimited powers. The devotee of the Lord is always therefore distinguished from all other living entities. The word Hari means one who takes away all miserable conditions. And Hari Medhisi means that the Lord is always planning ways to deliver the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya. The Lord is so kind that he personally incarnates to deliver the conditioned souls, and whenever he comes, he makes his plans. But each and every Satanam, verse out, just come, Dharamsam Satanatai, Samadhan, you'll get it again. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I have bent myself millennium after millennium, Bhagavad-gita 4.8. Since the Lord delivers all conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya, he is known as Hari Medhis. In the list of incarnations, Krishna is described as the supreme and original personality of Godhead. In Tejamsa Kalapamsa Krishna Subhavasana, in Jagi व्याकुलं लोकं ब्रह्मति वेगे भगवान् श्री कृष्ण कृष्ण the visual person of the body appears in this material world when the demigods for the devotees of the Lord are disturbed by the demons. So it's an interesting perspective on the devotees here. We just go back a couple of verses and recap the position of these purchasers who are offering prayers to the Lord, because it appears to them, being very pleased with them. So the purchasers, after pleasing the Lord with their devotional service, they were given a benediction by the Lord that they could marry this very special girl and create children. And that they were given the facility to enjoy this world as well as the heavenly planets, without any hindrance for 1 million celestial years. So the devotees, and the Lord is giving them that facility for 1 million celestial years. And do the calculations. And that they would still develop unadulterated devotional service to the Lord, and become completely free from all material contamination. And at that time, of course, they'd be completely free, unattached from all the so-called happiness of the heavenly and the hellish planets, and they'll go back to God again. It's described also in verse 29 that those engaged in the devotional service, they understand that the Lord is the ultimate enjoyer or beneficiary of all activities. And they act for the Lord, and by doing so, they're always engaged in topics for the Lord, even though they're engaged in many of the different activities that people engage in this world, and even though they participate in family life and heavenly pleasures, etc., they're not affected by the results of their actions. That's quite extraordinary. And so this is, these they're actually situated, they're situated in relationship to the Super Soul in the heart, on a Brahma Buddha platform, and they never become bewildered. So there's an extraordinary position of these devotees. And so they're offering their prayers, and their prayers explain this transcendental situation, the nature of the Lord and the nature of the devotee, and how they're situated. So this is the mood of the prayer. So bearing that in mind, that helps us to enter into these prayers. So in this, so previously here in these couple of verses, it's been describing how the Lord himself also expands in the forms of Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma. But the form of Vishnu, all these incarnations, whether they're guna avatars, lila avatars, Purusha avatars, the expansions come from, all the avatars, all the incarnations come from Krishna. And in the Bhagavad Gita we see that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and he is to say it very clearly here, these Rachetas, you know, they give the very name Krishna, Vasudevaya Krishna. This Krishna is the very source of all the incarnations of the Lord. The first expansion of Krishna is Balaram. And then from Balaram we get the Chantavyuha, which is Vasudeva Sankishana, Virginia Andruda, who reside in Dwarka. Vasudeva Krishna goes to Kurukshetra, because the original form of Krishna, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. And so when it appears that Krishna has left Vrindavan, he hasn't. But when it appears that Krishna has left Vrindavan, it's actually his expansion as Vasudeva. And even that Vasudeva form of Krishna that we see in Dwarka and Kurukshetra, that expands from Balaram. Do you know? Okay, the reference here. Of the descendants of Vishnu, I am Vasudeva. And then in the purport there, Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Vasudeva is Krishna's immediate expansion. Both Lord Krishna and Vasudeva appeared as sons of Vasudeva, so both of them may be called Vasudeva. From another point of view, because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, all the forms of Krishna that appear elsewhere are his expansions. Vasudeva is Krishna's immediate expansion, so Vasudeva is not different from Krishna. It is to be understood that the Vasudeva referred to in this verse of Bhagavad Gita is Baladeva, or Balaram, because he is the original source of all the incarnations, and thus he is the sole source of Vasudeva. So so Vasudeva Krishna, Vasudeva is the expansion of Krishna, and Krishna is the original. And we can understand that Krishna is the complete form, the full manifestation of the Lord in his full glory, from the perspective of the scriptures, which describe that. So all the scriptures describe Krishna as being original, and the Bhagavad Gita confirms this. Vyasadeva, who compiled all the Vedic literatures, spoke the Danta Sutra, which is the conclusion of all the Vedic knowledge, all the Puranas, the four Vedas, the Upanishads, and the Bhagavad Gita. The conclusion of all of that is in the Danta Sutra, that everything emanates from the absolute truth, who has three phases as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And that Bhagavan is the source of both Paramatma and Brahman. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva said very clearly, who is that Bhagavan? That is Lord Shri Krishna. And but in the Vedas, it is very, because people have so many material desires and material conceptions because of their material contaminations, they cannot understand the absolute truth. They're engaged in material activities and therefore they can only understand some limited material concept of some supreme authority, and therefore they accept different demigods or powerful personalities as supreme, such as Shiva or Brahma or other demigods who are usually considered on a lesser platform than those Trinity. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna, you rise above this platform of the Vedas and come to the position of understanding Vedanta. Then you understand the Supreme. So, therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is actually considered to be a summary of the Vedanta Sutra as well. And the statements in the Bhagavad Gita, therefore Krishna quite often refers to the Vedanta Sutra, that you know, this is presented in the Vedanta Sutra at that. So Krishna asked Arjuna, the majority of the Vedas deal with people who are on the material platform, cannot understand the Supreme, cannot understand the Supreme destination of the Supreme God of Life. But if you want to know that, you must come to the understanding of the Vedanta. And the Vedanta understanding begins with Brahma Jigyasa. You must learn about Brahman, spirit, not those personalities who have material bodies, don't take them as supreme. And therefore it's very clearly stated here that personalities like Brahma and even Shiva, they're not supreme because they're not on the platform of Brahma. They're on the platform where they still have material bodies. But you actually have to go above that. Of course, within the body of Brahma is a living entity. You know, the Lord Brahma is a living entity who is Brahman, the spirit soul. And within the material body of Lord Shiva is also a part and parcel, spiritual living entity. Lord Shiva, that living entity, has more qualities closer to Vishnu, Vishnu does not have a material body. He is Lord Vishnu. He is Vishuddha Satvaya, completely on the platform of Brahman spirit, 100% Narasimha. Therefore, to understand Vishnu, one has to come to the pass through all the different Vedic processes which deal with those material nature and come to the understanding of the Dhamma Sutra, which begins from the platform of understanding Brahman, subjects which are purely on the spiritual platform. And then when we understand the varieties of Brahman, we understand that the source of all the varieties and expansions and all the different living entities, parts and parcels on the platform of Brahman all emanate from Krishna. And that is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is also stated by Krishna himself. It is also stated in the So there were Krishnas stated in the various Vedic literatures in a confidential way, because it's very difficult for people to understand, so as not to disturb them. It is stated in a very confidential way that you want to worship Shiva as supreme, but also very quietly actually Krishna supreme. I love what it's said to you. You want to accept this one is supreme, yes, you go ahead, but actually Krishna is supreme. That's how the faith is doing, that's a very sort of confidential way. So, they're not going to take notice of it. So Krishna's very clever. So, this Krishna, likes to utilize all his, because he is supreme, therefore all worshippers, his devotees also supreme, not all worshippers. You know, certainly Krishna wouldn't want that he is supreme and his followers, like the way down the list, doing okay. You know, everyone else is doing really well. Krishna is supreme, but his followers are, you know, really struggling. And the worship of Shiva, the worship of Brahma, you know, all they're really doing well. He wouldn't want that. So it is natural that those who worship Krishna, the Lord is always using his transcendental brain to take away the difficulties of material existence and to increase the influence of his devotees. And this chapter, we see that these retreaters, you know, their lives manifest that quite remarkably. And, you know, it's shown, you know, the lives of the retreaters show to quite a remarkable extent that literally the devotee is not subject to the restrictions and difficulties of all other worshippers. So much so, there is no restriction. That they can actually live anywhere in the material world, even enjoying the facilities of material existence. So apparently, they are attached to the sensual platform. They're attached to the sensual platform. In other words, they're not trying to shut down the senses, the devotees. But all others have that difficulty. That either they use the senses and get themselves into trouble, or they shut the senses down and get themselves into trouble. And the devotees don't have that problem. And that's exhibited by the lives of these retreaters. And Krishna, from the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna does a summary of the Bhagavad Gita, he explains that in the second chapter. So the second chapter is, it gives a look at the whole Bhagavad Gita from the very beginning. This is, a natural thing to do. It's a good thing to do. Sometimes people think, even devotees in Islam, get a little confused by this. That sometimes, for instance, as an example, as we study the Bhagavad Gita, in order to understand this pastime, we really have to understand the Bhagavad Gita, which I'm going to go back to. So, sit there and hear you say, anticipation. I'm going to go back to that. But In order to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to understand Bhagavad Gita. In order to understand the Tenth Canto, we have to understand all these sections of the Gita. To really establish that above all the incarnations, we see the qualities of all the incarnations of the nine cantos. And then when we get to Krishna, it's just a whole quantum leap like that. So to understand that, and not to sin as an ordinary person, we have to get to understand all of these expansions of Krishna. But we as devotees, Prabhupada allowed us to just distribute Krishna book on the street. So then the devotees say, well, why go through the Gita? And if we're distributing Krishna book on the street to people who don't know anything about Krishna consciousness, why am I bothering to do Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Bhagavata? I'm just straight into the Tenth Canto, Prabhupada's Gita, bang, into this street. But, it's natural to do that because by doing that, what happens is that from the very beginning of Krishna consciousness, literally almost the first time you pick up a book, and Prabhupada also does this in the introduction of every year, he tells you so much about the different classes and this and that, something. Because you need to see the finished product of anything before you make a start on something with confidence. So sometimes if I'm doing one time I was seeing some people doing a Bhumi Puja, we had a similar discussion. There was that confusion, just read the 10th canto, why bother to be reading the 10th canto like that? And he said the same thing, they distributed on the street. So I said to him, so we're sitting on a bare block of land. I said to him, have you seen the picture of your house? Oh, yes. So you've seen every room decorated, the full thing, all your shoes. I said, yeah, now you're back to the foundations. So you don't start from that end. You can have a look at the finished product, but then you've got to go and dig up the ground and get the foundations in and work through it and put the frame up and do all that. Then you'll get to the other end. But if you couldn't see the finished product, you wouldn't bother. You know, someone says, you've got to dig a hole in the ground here. What for? Dig a hole, that's how I put it. So, it's like that. That it is good to see the end product. With the potatoes here, we're also seeing the end product of the nature of the body. If you follow the process of ocean service, you become situated like the potatoes. See that? But we can't jump up to that platform, and we certainly can't jump up to the platform of the Brajavasi, which is another very, very advanced level of devotion service. But we can have a glimpse of the end product, otherwise how do we then go back with great faith and determination, do all the hard work and do all the foundational activities at that. So, and that foundational understanding of how to achieve this goal is presented in the Bhagavad Gita. And in the second chapter, it gives a glimpse of the whole Bhagavad Gita. And so we're going to read a couple of verses from the Bhagavad Gita about this. And we really hope to explain some of these points here nicely. So, to understand the transcendental position of the Prachetas, Arjuna asks a similar question, verse 34, that, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence, So, after Krishna has told Arjuna, rise above the aspects of the Vedas, even the demigods and the three modes and two modes, it comes to this, you know, the limited platform of, you know, the spiritual platform of Brahman, where, and come to the level of devotional service and Krishna consciousness. Right? So he said that. And then Arjuna's asking about that. How do we know that someone's in this transcendental platform on the platform of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna? And so he says that the first verse, verse 55, it says, when a man gives up all varieties of desire, the sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified, finds satisfaction in self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So here, Prabhupada mentions that the devotees have all the good qualities of the great sages. So they have no personal desire, there's no mental concoction, and they're situated on the transcendental platform with transcendental good qualities. That even great sages and, you know, actually, it says of the good sages, great sages, but as we see, they actually have qualities higher than the greatest sages. And now, as soon as we hear this, that one has, that the person has given up all desires for sense gratification, one will naturally understand, well, that's impossible. Well, that's the first thing that should come to your mind. How does that even happen? And Prabhupada says, obviously such sense desire cannot be stopped. But if one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, then automatically sense desires subside without extraneous effort. And it says, the highly developed soul always remains satisfied in himself by realizing himself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. Such a transcendentally situated person has no sense of desires resulting from petty materialism, rather he remains always happy in his natural position of eternally serving the Supreme Lord. So that's the first thing that the devotee of the Lord is completely happy with that realization that I am the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, and therefore they have no desires separate from that position. Just as a servant of the Lord, whatever desires I have to fulfill that position, they're interested. So then it says, the next verse, one who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, who are related with his happiness, who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. Now, this is a really, here when we talk about this, the difficulties that one faces, one, either one's on the sensual platform, that if we engage on the sensual platform, it's going to bring up desires for sense gratification because the senses are coming into contact with the objects of the senses, or we can then, shut down the sensual platform, in which case then, you know, we've got the problem with these unsatisfied senses, disturbing and giving no peace. So there's a problem with attachment. Says here, fear, anger, you know, the senses become, so therefore we see in, many religious organizations, they're having a problem with, the priests have been, playing out behind the scenes, there's so many things, because they're becoming frustrated. So, either the detachment or, the attachment, either one is giving a problem, and it's just a life of fear and like that. So, but as a devotee, they're beyond that platform because they're only interested in the service of the Lord. So, as an example of that, for instance, say the devotee thinks, I'm going to work in the kitchen. Maybe they're a young, brahmachari, looking for a husband, or all the young men, handsome men, they're always in the kitchen. I'm going to get in there, a little bit of service in there. And that, or vice versa, the brahmachari, I guess the girls and them, and that. So, because of attachments, they may, do some service. And of course, that can lead to trouble because then they may start to, an association because of their attachments. They may struggle to follow the principles and the mind starts becoming disturbed and they can't think of Krishna. So then they may decide, so then I want to do service in Krishna, in the kitchen. See, so now I'm detached from working in the kitchen. First I'm attached to working in the kitchen, now I'm detached from working in the kitchen. There's one, one time, there's a occasion, and it was a Maharaj, I think it was Ramchal, that he was working in the kitchen. He said, I can't work with these women, other women in the kitchen. So the Prabhupada said, just don't go in there. But the point is that a devotee who's there situated as a servant of Krishna, they're on a different platform. Oh, Krishna needs me to work in the kitchen? Okay. But Krishna has some service to me elsewhere? Okay. There's no attachment or detachment which deserves their service. So that situation, if Krishna wants it, that's okay. Now Krishna doesn't want it, that's okay. But only the devotee who's happy for Krishna can be on that platform. Otherwise, one is either worshipping demigods on the platform of attachment, or trying to follow some process of jnana or yoga where one is trying to detach. Either way, there's always some trouble. Only the devotee is free from that whole process. Also, Prabhupada mentions in this verse that Sita Muni, that they're called Muni, but not an ordinary Muni. They're Sita Di, their mind is steady. A devotee, studying Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing from the acharyas, hearing from Krishna, they understand the goal is Krishna. Others, through their speculation, they can never really establish a goal. And even if they establish a goal, if they establish the goal as a demigod, then they're on the platform of sensual attachment. And if they establish the goal as impersonal, then they're on the platform of detachment, and their goal actually brings them back to the same problem. Only the devotees can actually, their goal, Krishna, allows them to be on that platform of dharma, the attachments, fear, and thus, they're not affected by they're not elated when there's happiness, and they're not disturbed when there's some difficulty like that. So this is a very, this is a unique position of the devotee. And, also, because we're acting on behalf of Krishna, others are acting for their own material successes or their own spiritual successes, liberation. But a devotee is acting for neither. They're acting for Krishna's happiness. And therefore, their situation is that if I can try to serve Krishna to my best ability, then I am satisfied. If they fail to get the result, then not disturbed. If there's some difficulties in getting the result, then not disturbed. They are completely neutral because they're just working to the best of their ability, and if there are difficulties, they accept those difficulties as their greatest source of happiness. But Krishna will see, I'm accepting so much difficulty to try and please him, and the devotee accepts that difficulty, that is my happiness. Krishna must surely be pleased by that. So again, they're above the threefold miseries. So, as we can see here, as mentioned in the next verse, that only using their senses for Krishna, that's described, one who is able to withdraw his senses from the sense objects, as the tortoise withdraws his limbs within the shell, he is fixed, firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. Now, the ability to do that also comes from Krishna, because by Krishna consciousness, one actually experiences ananda, or transcendental bliss, in full knowledge. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So, if one tries to find the satisfaction, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, they may realize of the possible sat, chit, and other features of the spiritual energy. They may realize the sat feature, or the eternal feature, that yes, I am eternal. If they are able to interact with the super soul, they also can experience the sat, chit, the feature of transcendental knowledge and eternity. But only when they reciprocate the Lord, who reciprocates in his Bhagavan teacher, do they experience the Ananda teacher, and thus they get the higher taste. So, and therefore, what it describes here, sense restriction for some spiritual process like the Stanga Yoga in the matter of Yama Niyama, Asana Priyama, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana Dharana is recommended for less intelligent persons who have no better knowledge. So you see the superiority of the devotee, the Krishna puts them in a superior position. And when they see people trying to practice Stanga Yoga, people in the world are glorifying these, you're practicing some of your, you do all these things and some of your things. And the devotee is thinking, how is this intelligent? Because they have no knowledge that, there's so many restrictions for this spiritual progress. It says, but one who has tasted the beauty of the Supreme Lord Krishna in the course of his advancement in Krishna consciousness no longer has a taste for dead material things. Why undergo so much difficulty? This is the lesson target. Someone can see the form of Krishna and think, that form of beauty has attracted my heart. Or one can leave one's family, go to a forest. I wouldn't want to be in the forest last night. It was very cold. Very cold and wet. And perform all sorts of extreme duties. And here's another example for our public. To be on that platform of the yogis and the yanis, when they see delicious foods, they think, oh, I can't have any of that. Although they want that, nice decorum, and but a devotee says, here is Krishna Prasadam, let me honor Krishna Prasadam. Which one is easier? So then you ask, someone says, my process is that I'm avoiding Krishna prasad because it's too nice. And the lotus process is I'm having plenty of Krishna prasad because it's Krishna's mercy. Which one is the more intelligent? And the one who's having the prasad automatically loses their desire for, you know, power material things, as Prabhupada says, and the other one is still struggling, you know, because it's an artificial process. Actually, the taste is there, but they can't, So, ultimately, and this is described here, what happens to those persons that on that platform, the yogis, what have you? Now, the next verse, the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. Now, there are examples we see here that there are many learned sages, philosophers and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses, but in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to the material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. Even Vishwamitra, a great sage and perfect yogi. So he's not a beginning, pseudo-devotee as we get in touch. This is a perfect yogi. Was misled by Manika into sex enjoyment, although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance in yoga practice. And of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind's senses without being fully Krishna consciousness. Without engaging mind in Krishna, one cannot cease such material engagements. So then we have that nice verse by Janu Vishara, and it says, since my mind has been engaged in service of lotus feet of Krishna, and I have been enjoying an ever new transcendental humor, whenever I think of sex life with a woman, my face at once turns from it and I speak at the thought. Prabhupada says, it's as if a hungry man has satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious eatables. So, one process is that one is so satisfied that they're full. And another process is, no, I'm not going to have any, I'll just struggle away. I want some, but I'm not going to have any like that. Okay? So that is less intelligent. That's the full. The position of the movie. If I look at people who are glorified as the greatest person in the universe, or fallen man, the body of these fools. And so Krishna presents his devotees as, what does it say? Always increasing influence of his devotees. And such is the position. And they attain the status of exalted sages and yogis so simply, without struggle. That is their influence, that is very interesting. Then Krishna says, one who restrains his senses, keeping him under full control and fixing his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Now, he gives another example. We know that there are many devotees of Shiva. I think Vasa is a devotee of Shiva. And devotees of different demigods. Now here, Prabhupada says, unless one is Krishna conscious, it is not at all possible to control the senses. As cited above, the great sage Vasa Muni picked a quarrel with Maharaj Pandarish, and Vasa Muni unnecessarily became angry, had a cry, and therefore could not check his senses. So Vasa Muni is one of the most famous powerful yogis, but he could not control his mind and senses, which is not good for the yogi. That's not a good look. Maharaj Angharij had perfect control, even though the Vasa Muni tried his best to agitate him. He says, on the other hand, the king, although not as powerful as a yogi, as the sage, but the body of the Lord silently tolerated the sage's injustices and thereby emerged victorious. And ultimately, that powerful yogi, the Vasa, was defeated and humiliated by the prowess of the Vasa, who really didn't do anything at all. He just remained humble and silent, basically. Now, he did that because Maharaj Angharij had his mind and all his senses fully engaged in devotional service. And we see that this says here, as a blazing fire burns everything within a room, Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of the yogi, burns up all kinds of impurities. So, if we keep Krishna in the heart, always meditating, that form of Krishna within our heart burns up the impurities within the heart, and even the Vasa Muni, who approached Angharij, so the Vasa Muni was a yogi, but he was on the platform of material impurity, and he was burned up as well. So internally and externally, the impurities are driven away by the grace of just carrying Krishna within the heart like that. So then, therefore, we see that now in verse 22, 62, sorry, while contemplating the objects of the senses, the person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. Now, here we get back to Brahma and Vishnu. You remember that in the third book? Yeah? You all following? It says here, in the material world, everyone, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to say nothing of other demigods and heavenly planets, is subject to the influence of sense objects, and the only method to get out of this trouble of material existence is to become Krishna conscious. So what to speak of the followers of Shiva? Shiva himself is subject to the influence of the senses, because he has a material body, and he's not God. And it says here, Lord Shiva was deep in meditation, but when Parvati agitated him for sense pleasure, he agreed to the proposal, and as a result, Kartikeya was born. But when Haridas IV was a young devotee of the Lord, he was similarly lured by the incarnation of Maya Devi. But Haridas easily passed the test because of his unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna. So it says here, one who is not therefore in Krishna consciousness, however powerful he may be in controlling the senses by artificial repression, is sure ultimately to fail, for the slightest sort of sense pleasure will agitate him to gratify his senses. So in the next verse also, so basically we see here that this verse here very nicely explained in the verses of the Bhagavad Gita, the platform of sense control, peacefulness, steady intelligence on a level that is beyond even the greatest personalities within the universe, as shown by the example of Haridas IV compared to Lord Shiva himself. Haridas IV, born in a Muslim family, not considered to have a very exalted birth, but just chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, in this way, and basically, here we see that these potatoes ultimately achieve the spiritual world But we can also see by the level of Krishna consciousness that they were already situated in devotional service on the spiritual platform. And just the last point, if I can just, says verse 72, that is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not rewarded. If one is thus situated in the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. Prabhupada says, one can attain Krishna consciousness for divine life at once, within a second. For one may not attain such a state of life even after millions of births. So this state, he says, it is only a matter of understanding and accepting the fact. So anyone who picks up Prabhupada's Gita, clicks through the second chapter, the basis of that, if they say, I accept that, and I'm going to do that, they can attain Krishna consciousness straight away. Or they may hang around 30, 40 years or 30, 40 million years and still not attain that. But it's there straight away. Now, this about the Lord, about the spiritual world, says there is no difference between the kingdom of God and devotional service to the Lord, since both of them are on the absolute plane. To be engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord is to attain the spiritual kingdom. In the material world, there are activities of sense gratification, whereas in the spiritual world, there are activities of Krishna consciousness. Attainment of Krishna consciousness, even during this life, is an immediate attainment of Brahman. And one who is situated in Krishna consciousness has certainly already entered into the kingdom of God. Anyone has any questions or comments on that? Yeah?
Prabhu, in this second chapter of Gita 62 that you just read,
yes,
Lord Brahma is compared to, compared against Hiras Thakur, sorry, Toshima.
Yes.
And one sentence is that they are subject, the demigods like Toshima are subject to influence of sense objects, you know?
Yes.
So here he is speaking Rudra Gita, and you know, in that he's always meditating on Lord Sankarshan. And he's a pure devotee, as we know, he's the top of the devotees. But then how can we understand that he was, like, it's just mentioned in this one text, one who is not Krishna conscious is subject to material desires but contemplating on his senses. Like, how can it apply?
Yes, the, even the demigods, when they, Krishna shows us that if they have any good qualities, it is because he, Krishna, is maintaining those good qualities. And if the demigods forget their sense of Krishna consciousness, then immediately they will fall from that platform of spiritual life. So that's the point. And even, you know, so therefore, devotees, although they attain an exalted position above all others, they always remain very humble because they understand it's because Krishna is maintaining my spiritual situation, Balaram, his spiritual strength. Therefore, I'm able to remain, and that is stated here. Remember the verses I read. So I'm going to be go back to one of the first ones I read, which is text 56. And in the third book there, Srila Prabhupada says that such a fully Krishna conscious person is not at all disturbed by the onslaughts of the threefold miseries, for he accepts all miseries as the mercy of the Lord, thinking himself only worthy of more trouble due to past misdeeds. And he sees that his miseries by the grace of the Lord are minimal and applies to others. So he sees that if I'm suffering, that's the Lord's mercy. And then, Similarly, when he is happy, he gives credit to the Lord, thinking himself unworthy of the happiness. He realizes that it is due only to the Lord's grace that he is in such a comfortable condition and able to render better service to the Lord. So if we're situated nicely as devotees, we never become proud. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that one can get the most exalted position by being a devotee, but we must always remember that that is Krishna's mercy. And he shows that. Implies devotees and demigods, who are also devotees, but the moment we are not connected with Krishna, our senses and our desires, then our exalted position is lost.
A very precarious position.
Yes, well, it's actually a very sound position. It will always just remain a humble devotee, but it's very precarious. If we become proud of it.
Thank you. So one more online question from someone. We can say it's easy to control senses in Krishna consciousness. How do we understand when devotees leave Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, it's the same principle. If we become proud of our, if we forget, that Krishna is maintaining our good life as devotees, and we become proud. When we become proud, we commit offences to other Vaishnavas, or when we become proud, we feel that we're the enjoyer again of the devotional facilities that we feel that we deserve. These devotional services come from my service, therefore I'm the enjoyer of these facilities, I'm the enjoyer of this, that, and the other. So it is the same principle. If we always see Krishna as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, he is the proprietor of everything. He is the enjoyer of everything and he is the friend of everyone. If we never deviate from that simple consciousness, our position is secure as devotees. So the most simple, God variety devotee can be fixed up and go back to Godhead. And as soon as we forget that, I'm enjoying it, then there's Akarat, Seva Akarat, Vaishnava Akarat, Guru Akarat. And the result of Akarat is that Krishna removes our taste. And we actually taste, even if we're performing spiritual practice, you mentioned Harinam Santami, even if we're chanting for Krishna and performing spiritual activities, beyond being material touch point. So then we start searching out the taste and measure of the world. So by pride, we enter into the realm of aparada, offences, and by offences, Krishna withdraws the taste of the people who are doing the devotional service, and by losing that taste, we then search it out somewhere else. But if we're humble devotees, not proud. Krishna is God, he is enjoyer, proprietor, and whatever arrangement he makes for me, I accept as his mercy, and I keep doing my devotional service, trying to please him, even though I'm completely unqualified. That position is very safe, very simple, not very difficult. Yeah? Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.